You're listening to Stateside. I'm Cynthia Canty. He teaches young writers at the University of Michigan, but he certainly practices what he teaches. Through the years, Keith Taylor has published short stories, co-edited volumes of essays and fiction, and he's given us powerful collections of poetry. His newest book of poetry is The Birdwhile.
To face the ordinary. There are moments when you step alone from the forest into a long valley high in the mountains. Moments you will remember when you sit for 5 minutes, decades later, catching your breath to face the ordinary world. You look out and see moose or caribou moving through the scrub. You stoop down to tracks in the mud and spread your fingers to measure the foot that walked here. The paw is larger than your hand. These moments, still filled with joy and fear, because an inch or two outside the track are the clear, deep marks of the grizzly's claw.
Well, Keith Taylor, that would get you waking up. Welcome back to Stateside.
Thank you, Cindy. It's good to be here.
That was a beauty. What a moment that must have been. I want to start, Keith, right with the title to help frame this collection. What is a bird while?
This is why writers read books, Cindy. This is a lovely moment hidden in Emerson's massive journals where he defined the bird while. I can actually read the 19th century language since I put it in here.
Oh, you should.
In a natural chronometer, a bird while may be admitted as one of the meters, since the space most of the wild birds will allow you to make your observations on them when they light near you in the woods is a pretty equal and familiar measure. That's in Emerson's journals on May 14th, 1838. So it's the space and time a wild bird will allow you to look at it before it goes. I'm not quite sure it's as regular as Emerson thought it was, but nonetheless, it's a cool moment.
And through this book and this collection of poems, you seem to be sharing with us, your readers, a lot of personal memories and moments that you've experienced, whether it's things had happened while you were overseas or being outdoors and experiencing birds, wolves, wildlife. Going back how far?
Oh, there are memories. Well, that memory of the poem we started with is a memory from the summer of 1969 when I worked in the Yukon as a cat boy for the hunting outfitters. So that's a long time ago.
That is.
It's an indication of how old I am. But it goes back that far. There might even be some childhood memories buried in here.
Is there a theme or themes that really unite these poems?
I hope there are. I hope there's a line. I like to talk of it as an arc that goes through here, which starts out sort of a little bit a ways away, even though the first poem is about home, and then comes back to this place, Ann Arbor, southeastern Michigan, where I live, expands from that into some devastated natural areas, and then starts coming out into some possibilities for recovery. So I hope that that's the movement through the poem. Poems even touch on extinction in the middle there somewhere, but then hopefully come up a little bit at the end.
In fact, speaking of hope, your poems certainly explore the moments when wildlife bumps up against humans and vice versa. Would you read us the poem that you call Bird Rescue?
I will. This is dedicated for Sherry Smith, who is an art professor at the University of Michigan, but she also spends a good deal of her time rescuing birds, and she just happens to be my neighbor. So for the last 30 years, when we've been able to, we've helped her. Bird Rescue. Some reasonable people think the horned grebe floating down the Detroit River between car-sized ice floes, diving deep into current to search for fish, then rising into a pool of oil or synthetic fuel, deserved to die. Maladjusted, they say, to our new world. But the grebe gasped its way to shore ice, water seeping through spoiled feathers. A sentimental soul found it there quivering in snow, tried to wipe away the oil, then brought it here. We warmed the bird, fed it mealworms, and waited for some liveliness before bringing out our dawn, detergent of choice for bird rescue. I stared into its red eye and held the grebe, trembling and tense, under a gentle stream of water warmer than anything it had felt in months, while the real bird rescuer worked the soap in, lifting the oil out. She succeeded when the feathers fluffed on their own. The grebe was light in my hands. Its hollow bones felt delicate, breakable, until a wing flapped against me, strong and longing for flight. A day later, we took our horned grebe down to the Huron and the one patch of open water below Barton Dam. It scuttled out of its cage, dove quickly, then resurfaced a few yards farther away, ruffled its feathers, and drifted down to join the indifferent ducks.
The indifferent ducks. I love that. But it was a success story.
It was. It was. The bird was rescued.
So what's the process, Keith Taylor, that you go through as you turn an experience like that into a work of art?
I wish it were regular. I mean, first of all, you've got to get the words down. For me, the words are almost always wrong when I first get them down. So I have to go back and I have to fiddle with
them. What do you mean wrong?
What do I mean wrong? Boy, these are difficult questions. They seem so simple, Cindy. What do I mean by wrong? They sound wrong. They don't sound full enough. They're not capturing the moment. The language is too flat, not evocative enough. So I've got to go back and try to fiddle with things, cut things. I cut a final stanza off that bird rescue poem when the book was in galleys. So it never ends. It's a process that goes on all the time.
How do you know when to stop? How do you know when you've got it? Do you have to just... Do you ever know?
A famous person once said that a poem is never finished, it's only abandoned. So, you know, at some point you just have to abandon it and move on because you want to write some new poems. So,
and there's
let that one go.
The thing about the pie crust, you can fiddle with it too long and then you've ruined the pie crust.
Exactly, yeah.
Speaking of personal experiences, I'd love if you would, on page 60, you have a wonderful quick poem that tells a wonderful story called Running Down the Hills. Would you read us that one?
Yeah, this goes a long ways from Michigan. This is in Southern California. To feel in Los Angeles County that I might get eaten by a wild beast was an odd feeling. Running down from the hills. I limped too close tonight and too far into that dry South CA Valley and came out on a high, sweaty trail I didn't know. It took forever on bad knees. Fog was blowing in cold, and I was hobbling down too slowly when a mountain lion screamed somewhere below me. I moved more quickly then.
Perfect. And I bet you did.
I leaped down that hill like a 17-year-old boy. It was a sight to see.
You kind of talked about an arc that you wanted to have your readers go through as they read The Bird While. I'm sure you have notes and pages of things you've written and drafts and sketches. How do you decide, all right, this is what I'm going to create for this book?
Yeah. I mean, that's a big process. I call them constellations. I published little limited edition regional chapbooks along the way. I published three of them that I sort of cannibalized for this book. And they're in their own constellations. But then sometimes those poems and then the new ones fall into different patterns. And I think they add up to different sorts of things. There's one little section in the middle where I kind of had this muse figure that recurs. And there are four poems. Three of them came from three different chapbooks, and the other one was a commissioned poem for a dance that I did a poem for. So, you know, you never quite know what's going to happen. You go, oh, those poems all fit together. There's a figure in those poems that comes back all the time. So,
when you have people encounter you who say, oh, you write poetry, I've always loved poetry, what does it take for someone who's drawn to poetry to actually make the leap and begin to have the courage to write it?
If someone is already drawn to poetry, they understand the intensity of emotion that can happen in a small space. At some level, they already understand that. And then they just have to make the effort to do it themselves. And who cares if it's bad? You know, I mean, who cares if it's silly? I mean, mostly it's going to be seen by the people you love or by even by no one. Emily Dickinson didn't intend to show her poems to anyone. And if you make that next step beyond that to looking for an audience, then you're, you know, initially you're putting yourself out there because you'll get rejected and you'll get people who will say mean things to you.
And this is someone who's speaking from experience.
It is, yes. I had my decades of mean things said to me. Every now and then, people will still say mean things, but not too often anymore.
When you look at the young people in front of you in the classroom, what strikes you about the work they're turning out?
Well, I mean, it changes. The things that happen in the writing classroom reflect the time periods we live in. So right now, there's a lot of issues of identity. There's a lot of personal stories of vulnerability. Vulnerability is a word that the good young poets like to use these days. That has not always been the case. So in the past, there have been sort of questions of language that have dominated the young poets. They just want to figure out, where does meaning come from? Sometimes there'll be a moment that's anti-war. It's going to be really interesting to see what the current political climate generates in poetry. Given the performance element that has been lingering for the last couple of decades, I suspect there's going to be a lot of that around the political moment. So, you know, they keep me fresh. They keep me going. Even when I don't agree with them or even when I wish that they would try a different approach to the poem, their passion and their curiosity enlivens me.
Well, with that in mind, for a final taste of the poems in a Birdwhile author's choice, what do you want to end with today?
Okay, I want to end with a poem called, since we were just talking about my students, here's a poem called Summer Teaching. I do spend my summers, the last decade, more than a decade now, teaching at the University of Michigan Biological Station. So this is a poem that came from listening to those young science types. Summer Teaching. Driving the young scientists back from a beaver dam, I listened to their talk about life as information encoded in letters between spiraling strands of protein, how we will soon digitize our sequences, and the information that is us, everything about us, will never die. I drive carefully on the back roads and the freeway, hoping that whatever gods left today haven't heard or are off chasing beautiful children who escape by turning into trees.
Keith Taylor's The Birdwhile, part of the Made in Michigan Writers series. And also, talk to us a little, a hat tip to your illustrator from Ann Arbor.
Tom Port, wonderful drawings in here. Tom's been a book illustrator for 40 years. I've known him for 30 of those years. I wanted to get some drawings in here, and I went to Tom and asked him, and he consented. Did the cover. Cover's beautiful. And then these very precise drawings of plants. I knew that Tom's drawings would be precise. They would be specific. So there's a bloodroot in there. There's a skunk cabbage. So you know what those are if you know those things.
Yeah, beautiful, beautiful illustrations and poems by Keith Taylor. Congratulations. And as always, thanks for being with us on Stateside,
Keith. Thank you, Cindy.